Hello, friends. Welcome to No Cap Room. My name is Jake Fisher. I'm coming to you live from Brooklyn. I'm back. I'm a little bit sick from layovers and people tapping me to wake up to go to the bathroom and waking me up from the sleep that I had planned. But it's good to be home, partly because it brings me even closer to my man, your man, everyone's man, Dan Devine. What is up, buddy?
It's good to have you back. I'm glad that you didn't wind up, lost in a terminal like Tom Hanks in that movie.
Wow.
Like that you didn't wind up sort of becoming a citizen of the world because you couldn't get back here, even though it was a very long trip. And apparently you've got like a whole bunch of congestion nestled right in this area. I think it's okay. We're going to let all that move out, and we're just going to talk about some basketball and ease you back into stateside living.
It's pretty crazy you said that, because actually during my long layover in Doha, I watched The Terminal with Tom Hanks. We didn't talk about this. I'd never seen it before. I had a long layover. I was heading to JFK. I figured, what better time than now? And that was the first time I saw it. What a delightful movie.
But is this sort of like when the pandemic started and people were like, I want to watch all these post-apocalyptic movies about airborne pathogens, where you're like, I'm in this thing. I feel like I'm just in the mode for it. See, I don't think I would be able to do it. I would start becoming very concerned that I would, in fact, wind up, although I guess Doha seems like a pretty, if you got to be lost someplace for a long time, maybe not the worst one.
Yeah, pretty sweet. And then shout out to Global Entry. Actually, I shouldn't be saying that. I should be gatekeeping Global Entry, literally, because the gate, it is the gate to the country. What a remarkable experience. I'm also coming to you wearing my best Pat McAfee sleeveless shirt today, because this is I came home to a lovely, it ties into the World Cup. I came home from FIBA, where Jordan Clarkson was the star of the Gilas national team. And I came home to a lovely matching top and bottom set, two of them, of Jordan Clarkson's new Lululemon line. So shout out Jordan Clarkson, FIBA World Cup superstar, now Lululemon private collection. The guy had a hell of a summer, and we're back in New York, where the NBA's competition committee, also, they arrived here. They've been here. I don't know exactly when the vote passed, whether it was last night or today. We're recording this Wednesday afternoon, but the final tally, the only thing that matters is that the board of governors, the competition committee, they have approved new strict guidelines. I already see the word guidelines. It makes you want to make another Captain Jack Sparrow, Pirates of the Caribbean reference on the podcast, but I will not. But it's important, because that's kind of where this thing is getting at, where I think our conversation is going to go. They're trying to make it so that, quote, star players, which that is going to be someone who is considered or has made an all-star or an all-NBA team in the past three seasons, no team can have two of those players resting at the same time. Under the new rules, teams will be fined $100,000 for the first violation, $250,000 for the second violation, and $1 million more than the previous penalty for each additional violation. That is a steep penalty, man. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
It's like the repeater tax of, extra rest guidelines. I have a few thoughts. One is just going back to the way you entered this. We need to have stricter guidelines about sleeve usage on the show. So you have no sleeves on. I have no two sleeves. Sets of sleeves to balance us out. But I think from here on out, we need to communicate beforehand. If you're not doing sleeves, then I need to not do sleeves, or we both have to. We have to be, we're a team here, Jake. You can't have two star players, no sleeves on one episode.
There you go.
My other thought is, like, it's literally a decade in the making. Like, this was November of 2012. I remember because I wrote about it for Yahoo Sports, for Ball Don't Lie, when Greg Popovich decided to send Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, and Danny Green, all of them, home from a road trip.
So you're saying Danny Green counted in your mind?
Well,
he wouldn't have applied under these rules.
He wouldn't have applied under these rules, but he was a starting player on that team. And Pop sent all of them home, because it was the end, of a 5 games and 7 nights road trip before they played the big three Heat. And what was like a huge, everyone was looking forward to this national TV TNT game. And there was like a huge hue and cry about it. David Stern went nuts and apologized to NBA fans and fined the Spurs $250,000. Fined them $250,000 for like acting, what was the exact quote, in a manner contrary to the best interests of the NBA. And that kind of like tick, tick, tick over time. And it became like load management becomes kind of the law of the land. And every team engages in some measure of injury management or load management. And it's become a huge deal over the years. And this is the owners, this is the league office and the league's marketing partners and broadcast partners in particular, looking to take some of the control and the power back from that. I'm very interested to find, I mean, putting the significantly heavier financial incentives in for not resting multiple stars or resting them on national TV games or in-season tournament games, all that kind of stuff, it moves the incentive somewhat. I'll be really interested to see how much, if a team is really like gung-ho about its sports science, about its, you know, injury management, the way that its training staff thinks, I'll be really interested to see how heavily this shifts things. But it's certainly a big move by the league to say, it's going to hurt you if you just keep your guys out for rest for kind of, if it's a 50-50 call and you rest the guy, we know we're going to make you hurt for it.
This was something that was definitely discussed back in Chicago during the combine. There was the flopping stuff that got brought up then too, if I remember correctly. The overall theme here, the 2+2=5 math that Olivia Rodrigo is doing that my girlfriend made me listen to while we ate dinner last night. There's a pop culture shout out for our listeners. The league is really trying to do whatever they can to juice up the importance of the regular season again.
Absolutely.
And to do that mental math, why do we think that is, Dan? Why do we think that is?
Well, I think that, well, part of it is broadcast, right? The league is about to start going into negotiating.
That's it. That's the five. It's
no,
the
broadcast. Because there's a second. Hang on, right camera. Second part of it is, so that broadcast is a big part of it. It's, you know, you're about to negotiate the next media rights deal, and you
to
want
me, that's the only part of it. So I'm curious what your second thing is going to be.
It's gambling. Because when you look at there's an important part of this that's sort of the exceptions. Bobby Marks at ESPN wrote sort of a detailed explainer on what's in this new policy. And it includes, you know, pre-approved designated back-to-back allowances for if your players are over 35 or have career workloads of more than 34,000 regular season minutes or 1,000 regular season and playoff games combined, or have a prior or unusual injury history. So there are carve-outs for like all your big superstars. There's carve outs for guys like LeBron or Steph or Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard, potentially.
Zion comes up to mind.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe even someone like Lonzo Ball.
Yeah. Unusual injury history, certainly. I mean, that would cover those guys for sure.
Would Ben Simmons count? I mean he's both someone who's been an all-star in the last 3 years. Maybe depending on when this counts, but he was an all-star in 21, I want to say.
Yeah, no, he was an all-NBA player 3 years ago, which is mind-blowing in and of itself. But there are 50 players who are covered over spread across 25 teams by this framework of your star players can't sit under certain circumstances. But there are also carve-outs and exceptions and then the potential for even more of them if you like provide the league with written sort of argument in advance. So the reason I say gambling stuff is they want advance notice. They want to make sure it's not like the afternoon of the game, the 5 o'clock injury report comes around and it's like, oh, this guy's actually not going to play. And that shifts the line or whatever late. And because of live betting, because of, you know, every media partner now has a gambling partner that has the same game parlay that has whatever, like all these things are major drivers of revenue now for the NBA. They want to make sure these games are on the up and up as much as possible. They want to eliminate the possibility for like late season team out of it, resting their star and all of a sudden puts the thumb on the scale for like the integrity of the game. Bye-bye Brad Beal sitting down the stretch for the Wizards. Bye-bye Dame sitting down the stretch for the Blazers, et cetera, stuff like that. I think most of it, you're absolutely right, is to deliver the best product to TV. I think a not insignificant part of it, and maybe even a growing part of it, is making sure that whatever, you know, actions on the game is on the up and up.
That's a great point. I try not to think about gambling. I really don't. It's something that I try to really put a whole blind eye towards. And it's a very salient point from a man such as yourself, who I talk to through a camera, that I am hoping to be balanced off of. So we give our listeners both sides of every coin. There you go.
Yeah. I mean, multiple sleeves, no sleeves at all. So yeah, we're trying to cover both sides of the spectrum.
I think
sleepwise.
I think the only other thing to say is, with all the exceptions and whatnot, the penalties are hard.
Yeah.
There's going to be some chicanery. There just always is. If you ain't trying to cheat, you ain't trying to win. And I think, you know, I was watching the quarterback series on Netflix, also en route home to get hyped up for football. I spent an all-nighter after Germany beat Serbia at the gold medal game. We'll talk about that in the next segment. Watching football, staying up, trying to adjust my body clock, getting sick. And when Marcus Mariota just like got benched for Desmond Ridder last season and decided to take a surgery that he could have done for the last three couple years, really reminded me of Damian Lillard deciding to get that ab surgery that he played with for two straight years, to your point that you mentioned about guys sitting down the stretch. So I think it will largely be good. I think it will largely be the tide that rises all boats of minimum games played. We got the new stuff with award requirements for all NBA teams now. We got the in-season tournament that I'll definitely be writing about next week with some thoughts from FIBA as well. Just more and more measures being taken, Dan, to make sure that your Tuesday night, you have more reason to annoy your wife and children to watch more basketball.
Well, I'm already annoying enough, as anybody that's listened to me for long enough knows. But you know, to your point about, is there going to be some chicanery? The way this is covered, I think the expectation is like, all right, well, instead of saying outright, we're going to arrest this guy for soreness, we're going to say it, you know, describe the specific injury, or it'll be like he gets a first quarter shift, but then we say, you know, he, you know, hamstring tweak or rolled ankle, and maybe he gets the rest of the game off, or gastrointestinal distress or something, you know, similarly vague, like Ferris Bueller, like nondescript symptoms, you know, clammy palms or whatever, to kind of get the guy the rest of the night off. That said, there's a provision in this, apparently, this is again, quote from Bobby Marks, team physicians will continue to determine if a player is injured, but to promote compliance with the new policy, the league has the right to investigate, including an independent medical review to determine the player's availability. There's, to me, when I hear that, I think potential Pandora's box being opened about the league deciding who gets to play and not, you know, team medical staffs. Given the teams have invested so much over the last decade and plus in sports science and in their training capacity, you know, their proprietary measurements for guys, you know, the workload that they're suffering from, whatever. The end result of all of this is aimed at more players that fans want to watch playing more regular season games on television and driving interest in the sport. If that is what we get in a like natural, positive way, like obviously I'm not going to argue about that. I do wonder if this is like when the league tries to put its thumb on the scale on these sorts of things, there are always unintended consequences downstream from that. And then eventually you wind up in another collective bargaining agreement or in another board of governors session trying to solve the problem you created the last time. So what that will wind up being, smarter people than me will be figuring that one out. But always, you know, arch an eyebrow at it as we, you know, move into whatever this comes next.
Let's move into what comes next on our rundown. Talking about the FIBA World Cup, Germany is like LeVar Ball, never lost, undefeated, 8-0 on their way to FIBA World Cup gold medal, the James Naismith Trophy, which they had sitting at half court over a glass case before every game during the knockout round where teams were still all around, and it looked like it was floating in midair. Pretty cool.
As long as it doesn't fall on anybody. I mean, that'd be my big concern. Anybody.
I want to give Germany the props because Germany's doing what I believe that Team USA can do, getting three-year commitments from guys to play. It's pretty sweet. They came this close. I'm showing my thumb and my pointer finger very close to each other underneath my desk. They came underneath this close. Desk.
Yeah, I'm like, it's an audio medium, but there is also a video component to it, and you are not moving your arms at all. It is very clear as I watch.
It's a sleaze. I didn't want you to be embarrassed by all of that.
All right, listen, you tell me whatever you want. I know that it's because you were working out like a madman when you were out there in Manila, and you know you want to show off the guns. I get it. The fans at home might not understand
that's actually not why I am wearing the sleeves, but that's why I didn't want to do that gesture in front of you. Our producer, John Gennaro, is saying they got three-year commitments from players up in Canada. I don't know the veracity of that. I didn't ask that, but maybe they did. I know that there's going to be a tug and pull of some guys coming to play for Canada in the Olympics who did not take part in this successful stint where they accomplished the bronze medal over Team USA. But let's bring it back to Germany really quickly, just because cool moment for them for falling short, feeling in their guts that they should have won the Eurobasket last year. They had a 7-point fourth quarter lead over Spain. I remember being shocked watching them fall apart, watching them collapse, the Dennis Schroeder reunion revenge tour, just being derailed by the dynastic Spaniards and Sergio Scariolo. So Germany comes back. They don't drop a game. They win the gold. They're going to be I mean, right now you should take Germany versus the field. Forget about, we'll talk about this, who Team USA is coming. Germany is a TEAM team. Mm-hmm. I know Serbia, who they just beat, and Serbia made a really strong effort to come pretty close. I mean, they cut that thing down to the wire as well. Bogdan Bogdanovic was a baller. Man, when he's healthy, that dude is good. I wrote about it today. I couldn't help think to myself, watching Bogdan just go off, that was the guy Milwaukee tried to pair with Giannis before Jrue Holiday. Yep. That happened mm-hmm. before Drew. I don't know. Bogdan's a little bit younger. Still not like spring chicken. A little bit younger than Drew. I don't know what the implications of that would have been, you know, timeline-wise with all this stuff of Giannis hanging up in the air. But just something to throw out. I've been talking for a while. Dan, you watched some FIBA stuff.
Yes.
You watched a bunch after it was live. You've talked. You've texted. I'm giving you the floor to shoot some shots.
Okay, well, a couple things. Yeah, imagine Bogdan Bogdanovic in Milwaukee in the place of Grayson Allen during the stretch of some of those playoff games, you know, where the Bucks wind up falling short. Having a two guard like that might wind up making a pretty big difference. Also having to be clear, they probably
wouldn't have had Drew and Bogdan. It probably would have been one or the other.
I mean, they could have both.
Maybe they could.
Yeah, the initial reporting that I remember, and you were reporting more closely on it than I was, but was that they were going to get both of them in that night. They were sort of swinging both those deals.
You're right.
And then the Sacramento one fell apart and so on and so forth. Anyway.
You're right.
But yeah, Germany, just two quick notes on them because I thought it was pretty impressive when I went back through it. In their road to the gold, they beat the teams that were ranked by FIBA number 2 in the world, the USA, number 3, Australia, number 6, Serbia, and number 7, Slovenia. So that is like a murderer's row to get to the gold medal. So richly deserved for them. A team that's built with sort of, you know, star power on the at the point in Schroeder, on the wing in Franz Wagner, and in the front court, where it's not star, but like Daniel Theis is a really good FIBA big. Mo Wagner, they had a lot of talent there. And then was it Obst, the shooter?
Andreas Obst
was you know, shooting the lights out there. So they've got talent at sort of all levels that you need on the offensive end.
Tyrese Haliburton is still sliding into the stands, being juked out of his shoes by Andreas Obst.
And the Twitter account or social media account NBA Paint chose to use that screenshot as the, like, this is where the portals open up and the Avengers all come back into assemble and LeBron walks through and KD walks through. We'll get more into that later. But like, I think, you know, as you see the way that Germany performed, as you said, as a team, Serbia, even without Nikola Jokic playing this summer, gets all the way to silver. Canada, without Jamal Murray, without Andrew Wiggins, still a ton of NBA talent and a ton of high level European talent, gets to bronze. Like, we are seeing that, you know, this is before you even get to Slovenia or you know, a better version of the Australia team, or France, who were eliminated early but will be hosting, probably have Victor Wembanyama back for the Olympics there. There's so much talent on so many teams around the world that if the US does not present a top flight, you know, elite talent, all NBA talent across the board roster, it stands a very, very good chance of getting got. And especially when it's one that's primarily guard and wing based in a league, in a format where size is really at a premium, and the way that you can pound the glass and play inside, don't have to worry about defensive 3 seconds, all that kind of stuff. You know, the way the Team USA's roster was built, I think, is something that they'll have to look at. And going back to that idea of a 3-year commitment, you said that's something that you think the U.S. would benefit from. This was the way it was, right? This was when Jerry Colangelo took over and sort of was moving things in the direction of that redeem team after the disappointment of the 2004 Olympics and the 2006 World Championship. It was, you need to have these guys locked in for multiple cycles. And then in more recent years, that's been difficult to do. Part of it is because FIBA changed the qualifying windows, changed the structure of the World Cup, so that instead of it being 2 years between, like in the 2 years between the Olympics, it's the year right before the next Olympic Games, because they wanted to get it out of the way of the FIFA World Cup. And it makes the calendar for American talent a little bit more challenging. The fact that it's been multiple tournaments in a row in Asia, in the midst of and around a global pandemic, probably also dissuaded some of the world's, some of the America's best talent from going. All that to say, there are reasons why this didn't work the way the Team USA was looking for. There's reasons to hope for a better outcome at the Olympics, but it's by no means a foregone conclusion, given not only the quality of a team like Germany, but the potential, you know, challenges that even an American roster with its own high level talent might face.
Yeah, let's save any more Team USA chatter until after the break, because we got plenty to talk about there. Some good teasers by you, some good appetizers. I want to say a couple more things just from my time at Mall of Asia Arena, where, again, shout out Dennis Schroeder, very much deserving MVP. Very cool story where last summer he had no NBA contract playing for Germany, comes back after using that Eurobasket stint into a vet minimum with the Lakers, into a strong postseason stint, into a nice four-year, $48 million payday from Toronto. Franz Wagner, though, man, he was that team's best player. Now, he missed a lot of time with an ankle injury. So without Schroeder, who's to say that undefeated, unblemished record would have been possible? Franz, though, was the dude. And I forgot how big he was in person, because I never saw him play live this year. Every time it happened when I was in town for a Magic game, he wasn't playing, or I wasn't, whatever it happened, I didn't get to see him play live. And he's just so damn big. It's crazy.
Yeah, like a legit 6'9", 230 or so. Like,
6'9" is probably underselling it. Like, he towered over any U.S. wing who defended him. He just did. I mean, Mikal Bridges is long, and he made Mikal look small. So Paolo's got some stuff to take back from this tournament in terms of the big man side of the being a tweener of the NBA, where he definitely played far more. I mean, he straight up told me, I'm not playing this role in Orlando. Like, he's going to be on the ball, and he's going to be having the ball in his hands both inside and outside. But that Franz Paolo pick and roll partnership that will probably end up being something that they go to time and again, where Paolo has developed a little bit more of that side of things, being a diver, being a roller, being someone who can make plays out of that, but also one dribble spin, two-hand dunk on your ass, Paolo Banchero. I think...
That came out of nowhere. Much like, I guess, the one dribble spin dunk on your ass,
that was what I was trying to do. That's what I was trying to do.
It's good. Very sudden.
I think, to me, from an NBA perspective, like, one of the biggest takeaways is, man, the Magic got something brewing down there. We've known that. We've been talking about that. We've been hyping up the net. Maybe here we got to declare it right now. The Orlando Magic, move away, Chicago.
Oh, they're not, that's Magic. Not your Bulls anymore. It's your Magic. Wow.
It might be my Magic.
Oh, man. This is going to be heartbreaking to Nikola Vucevic and the Montenegro national team. They went in with your love and your affection, and now they've lost it. Much like the Magic won that deal and the Bulls lost that deal.
Because also, he's not nearly as consequential to Orlando's stakes. I used to despise Mo Wagner as a basketball player when he was at Michigan. I had a lot of friends who went to Michigan. And he screamed, he shouted, he spit. I didn't think the guy was that good for all the, kind of like how people don't like Pat Beverly, don't like Dylan Brooks, who backed it up. And then some. Shout out Dylan Brooks, man. That's the last thing I want to say before we... But I just want to say, Mo Wagner, I did not think he'd be an NBA player. I still don't think Mo Wagner is a terrific talent.
Sure.
But by golly, when I first watched Germany come to Manila, because they were, I think, in Japan first. They could have been in Nikon. I don't remember. It was a long time ago. There were a lot of games that were played. They were not in Manila for the first rounds. When they came, Lithuania beats U.S. Montenegro. And Nikola Vucevic gave them a lot of problems inside. I said to people, Mo Wagner is going to be a problem for this team. Mo Wagner was a problem for Team USA. He was a problem for everybody. Mo Wagner has become a legitimate reserve big man in the NBA. And I never saw it coming. That's not to say it's such a story, but for Mo Wagner to like potentially be putting himself in a position to one day get like Isaiah Hartenstein money, I never would have seen that happening. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if you told me right now that like you look up and the Magic have a great couple of playoff run, type fun vibes, and to keep the band back together and to keep the best player on the team, potentially his big brother in town, I think Mo Wagner might be that type of reserve big man. Never thought that was coming. Upset of the century, in my opinion.
I mean, that's certainly more Mo Wagner talk than I thought we'd ever have on No Cap Room. But I mean, listen, if the Antetokounmpos can all be employed by the Bucks, why can't every Wagner wind up with a home in Central Florida? I think, dare to dream. Germany, their first gold medal in the German men's basketball team, first gold medal in any competition since 1993 Eurobasket. Wow. So huge for their national program. 1993. 1993, yeah. huge for their program. And then for the U.S. is a great note from super producer John Gennaro. Let's not be too shocked, because Team USA has only won gold at the FIBA World Cup twice since 1994. It's that in between years competition that we don't prioritize nearly as much as the Olympics. And in this case, you see it came back to bite everybody.
Last thing before we get to Team USA after the ad break, just got to give Canada their flowers, as Austin Reeves kept saying to us in the mix zone over and over and over again. He kept saying, give them their flowers. SGA is ridiculous, dude.
Yep.
I saw a screenshot on Twitter. Maybe we can find this, our social team, when they clip this, that like when he sent Mikal Bridges toppling to the floor on that double team kind of step back jumper at the top of the key, that his ankle was bent in this crazy angle. I've talked to some physiotherapists over the years who work with goniometers and try to measure out the different bend degrees of players' toes and their ankles and their knees and all that type of stuff. If that's some type of like P3 super sports science advantage that Shea's got going on for him, it would make sense, because it doesn't look like you're watching anything spectacular. He's just kind of moving slowly and then going a little fast. And moving slowly, and then going a little fast. And the jumper is not really there, man. Like, he is not a threat from deep at all on a consistent level. But when he gets inside the three-point line, every time he gets to any spot on the floor and he's launching, you just think it's going in, you feel it's going in, the opposing defense does. And when it does go in, it breaks your back and you hang your head. And Canada, if you look up, has a bronze medal hanging around their neck. Shea is that dude. He's probably going to be in the MVP conversation like this year if OKC has a run that people are expecting them to be capable of. I just want to give Shea his flowers and then also say I'm kind of in on Dylan Brooks. I don't know how long we want to go on that.
We can go a couple minutes.
Shea is the man. Also, Dylan Brooks just said F you to all the haters, and he really did it well. Like, he really, I know all the mean people online are going to say the three-point line was shorter and blah, 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 overpay. People are mean on the internet. I know we've known that for a long time, but it was just shocking to me how in August and September, when I'm just giving content for people to just click on for free, like they don't have to pay to click on a link. They just like to then yell about mean things about people. Dylan That's Brooks, true. Shut up, everyone. He didn't. But he gave create a credible rebuttal to anything that you could say about him from the playoffs. And that was remarkable to watch in person. And then to hear him like calmly talk about it afterwards for 25 minutes.
Yeah. Interesting that he was willing to talk for 25 minutes after this and not after the, you know, barking up the wrong tree with LeBron. This is like on SGA, you and I had talked about him a few times last season. We were both kind of early on that, or at least early in last season. Plenty of people have been projecting great things for him for a while, but that was like, it feels like the continuation of an ongoing ascent where he leads the Thunder all the way to the play-in tournament within one win of the actual playoffs, gets voted to the All-NBA first team. And, you know, you've said he'll be in the MVP conversation. He finished fifth this year. Like, now obviously far down from the top three guys and top two guys in particular, but still, like, that is an arrival. And it would be understandable if there was, you know, maybe a little deceleration, a little hitting of the brakes coming off that big campaign. But like, he's 25, he's just turned 25, and he only got better and was, I mean, you were up, you know, up close and personal, so you saw more than I did. What I watched, like, I don't, maybe you could argue that Luka was better, you know, bell to bell, but like in the entirety of the tournament, and, you know, Schroeder wins the MVP of the tournament because they win the gold medal. Like, I don't know that I saw anybody play better basketball than Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in the course of this tournament. So he carries that then back to Oklahoma City on a team that looks better, you know, and it was going to welcome in Chet Holmgren, is super deep, well-rounded across the sort of, you know, and in terms of their wings, their bigs, style of play. They've been growing and growing. This has the opportunity to be a real level up season for him, which, considering what he did last year, you know, the sky is absolutely the limit for him and for the Thunder. There's plenty of reason to be excited about them. I think I've already kind of penciled them in as like one of the five most interesting teams that I want to do when I do my stuff for the regular season. Like, I'd sort of dig into them a little bit. And then for Dylan Brooks, like, I'm a Dylan Brooks guy, and I have been for years. There's some old tweet I'm sure we could pull up from somewhere that's like, he's the kind of guy that, or you, in order to get the 95% of the, of helpful stuff, you've got to live with like the 5% or the 10% or whatever of stuff that makes you want to tear your hair out. And I kind of love guys like that, because he wouldn't be the player he is on the defensive end without that confidence, without feeling like I'm the best player on the floor every time I step on it, even if that is like flatly untrue. In order to play defense against the guys he has to defend, you have to have that kind of mindset and mentality. And I think he was an integral part of like revamping the culture and the style in Memphis, where they went from being a team that nobody expected anything of to being a team that was going to be like lead with its chin out and its chest out and be up in you. Like, he's, you can't tell the story of the rise of that team back to prominence without him. It was as disastrous an ending to his time in Memphis as you pretty much could have asked about or projected. The money that he got in Houston is going to continue to be viewed as like absurd and an overpay, even if it's talking about like a team that needs to reboot its culture and was looking for veteran help anywhere it could to try to make the playoffs right away. But if you were looking for an argument for why this guy is not only shouldn't be in Shanghai, but is an important player in the NBA and like a top level defensive player, somebody that you actively want to have on the wing, that's it. He just showed you. And that, in combination with Shea and guys like RJ Barrett and the potential of adding Jamal Murray and maybe Wiggins and, you know, the rest of the talent on that roster, Kelly Olynyk is an excellent FIBA big. Dwight Powell just continues to be in major minutes on whatever team he winds up playing on. Yep. There's so much for Canada to be excited about and to believe in itself going into that tournament next year. And Dylan Brooks is a gigantic part of that. So this is like the best possible dismount he could have had to this summer after the way things ended at the regular in the playoffs. And now he goes into Houston, never not brimming with confidence, but maybe even more so, you know, that the gold medal around, or the bronze medal rather, around his neck.
Let's go into our break with some confidence that we can handle the final bit of our rundown coming up next on No Cap Room. Welcome back. We have the Redeem Team 3,700 coming up apparently in 2024. So I was in the post game press conference with some of the local media folks. Shout out to Naveen and Nicole Ganglani. Shout out to Joe Varai. I met a lot of fun people in the media press corps, a lot of terrible people who asked awful, ridiculous questions and should never be credentialed ever again.
Stop doing this. Listen, man, everyone's trying their best. All right. Move on. I don't want to hear more about how unprofessional everybody but you is. Let's keep moving forward.
I'm not saying that. I'm giving shouts to very professional people right now. Someone, I believe it was Joe Varai, who asked me, oh, do you think LeBron will play in 2024? And Joe Varden was sitting right in front of me, and I said, look, man, I got no clue. I just parachuted onto this beat. Joe Varden is the FIBA beat writer, but I can guarantee you right now LeBron's playing in 2024. Sure enough, shout out Joe Varden. Before I even landed back in America, he and Shams Charania had an article out basically saying that LeBron wants it. He's coming back. He's beating his chest, and he's bringing the boys with him. So we'll see who actually does show up. Because it's September 2023. And something that a lot of people like to mention is that most of the basketball portion of the Olympics, maybe I should say this part quietly, it's not really in Paris. I don't know off the top of my head where exactly it is, but it's somewhere like outside the city. And people who are skeptics, who will always be skeptical and cynical, were kind of being like, well, once they find out it's not in Paris, they're not going to show up. I don't know, man. I think Katie, who's 35 by that point, right? LeBron, who's going to be pushing 40. Steph, who's going to be pushing 40. These guys are going to want to play the last time they can play on the Olympics. That's a fellow old man, Dan. Aren't I right?
Okay. Well, first off, hurtful. Not fair. Not nice. I would say, yeah, I mean, the names that come out of that sort of in the wash, you know, that report from Shams and Joe Varden, it's LeBron has spoken to Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Jason Tatum, and Draymond Green about joining up for Team USA at the 2024 Olympics. Devin Booker, Damian Lillard, De'Aaron Fox, and Kyrie Irving, among those who also have serious interest. Devin Booker specifically quote tweeted a Kyle Kuzma
tweet. I saw that today.
About like, you know, Team USA's got all these stars. They better find somebody that can, you know, is willing to take some, you know, play defense and then stand in the corner for a while. Also, like, wink. Maybe Kyle Kuzma could be that guy. Wink. Remember how I did that for you, LeBron, in LA? Wink. I don't think it's going to happen for you, Kuz, but I appreciate the effort. And then Devin Booker quotes you and says, I'll do it.
Well, Devin Booker's also doing that this NBA season. So he'll be very accustomed and ready to go for reprising that role just, I don't know, like 2 months after they're hoping to win the NBA championship.
For sure. But so as far as, you know, what will these guys actually do it? You know, will they change their minds? So LeBron hasn't played for Team USA since the 2012 Olympics, which was like the absolute peak of his powers, where he coming off the title, coming off the MVP, coming off, and then they win gold in London. He's like the deciding force down the stretch against Spain yet again. Another gold medal game against Spain in 2008. It was Kobe. 2012, it's LeBron kind of closing the door with Chris Paul. KD was there to win the gold medal in 2020 in Tokyo in 2021. This would give him an opportunity at three, and that's rarefied air. Not many people in the history of the program have three. Steph has never played in an Olympics.
Nada.
hasn't played for Team USA since the 2014 World Cup, and has not, and would have the opportunity to play for Steve Kerr, his NBA head coach. AD, same thing, not since 2014. So these are guys that have. Draymond had played in Tokyo, but again, this was an opportunity for, I think, three gold medals. Like this is a chance to cement yourself as among the greatest winners in the history of the greatest international basketball program there ever has been. And to say this, I mean, if this collection of talent, we've never seen LeBron James, Stephen Curry, and Kevin Durant on the same team in a game of consequence before. If you add in, you know, Anthony Davis, Draymond Green, insert whoever else is on it, like it's the closest that like this generation of guys is probably going to come to a dream team in terms of that level of talent, the all time talent. So you get to say you were there. You get to say you were on it. You get to have that experience. Everyone terms everything a last dance now, but fair enough. And then add in the cross platform synergy opportunities of everybody making their own friggin' documentary about it, for their own platforms. It seems like there's too many good things to pass up to do it if you're healthy enough to go. So there, I understand that this goes back to that question of why don't you require 3-year commitments? Because you know you're not going to get LeBron and Steph and KD for between year tournaments, but you want to leave open the possibility of getting them for one last run at the Olympics. So that's what Grant Hill and company did. And as soon as Team USA loses, the door is open to all those guys running through it. So maybe it's a minor setback for a major comeback kind of situation for Team USA. But I think there's reason to be skeptical about bringing a team that is so old, so many players, 35 and over, and the most important players all up there. But there's also reason to believe that if you brought those specific guys with that specific level of talent, that would be an awfully difficult thing for any other team in the world to deal with.
The other thing I want to say off the top here, well, we're not going to go too much longer. So this is at the bottom, basically. People are acting like, oh, you just snap your fingers and we're going to bring out our A team. We're going to win.
Right.
You go back to Tokyo. Team USA lost to France in the opening stages. They only won by like five. That gold medal game was not a cakewalk. It was not just we beat our chests and we swung our arms and they just gave us the gold. I just think that putting all these guys together in 5 weeks, Steve Kerr kept saying over and over and over again how it's so hard to do that. I'm not saying they're going to lose. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is, this is definitely not going to be the 1992 Dream Team because they waxed the floor with pretty much everybody. This is not going to be the Redeem Team where only Jason Kidd was the only guy over 35 or over 30. He was 35. John Gennaro is calling, our producer is calling this the Ocean's 13 team. Getting the band back together one more time.
Maybe that's that.
But just like an Ocean's 13 movie, I'm going to keep going along with this analogy that John put down. We're just not going to know that they're going to secure the heist until the very end. There's going to be twists and turns. There's going to be new bad bosses who emerge. I don't think that even this being such a story, I don't think that you know, the Joel Embiid sweepstakes between France and America will end up being the biggest free agent, you know, blah, 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 drama of 2024. That'll be the thing that takes the cake, that takes the headlines, that is the deciding factor of like how good this roster will be to me. Everything else will be just how glitzy and glammy is this team. But Germany's legit. Serbia's legit, and they're getting Jokic back. Australia's coming pissed off, thinking that they should have made it to the knockout round, and they didn't, and they're going to add other guys as well. Josh Giddey will be taking a step forward as being like the guy, as opposed to that team running around Patty Mills. Lithuania's getting some bonus back. I didn't leave the Philippines thinking, wow, the U.S. just, man, if we just sent out a better team, we would have kicked the crap out of everybody. Couldn't have been further from the truth. So it'll be fun. I'd love to see all these guys play together. Maybe I'll end up going out there and covering that tournament too, and I'll be very happy they're there, and we'd love to chat with anyone who goes. I'm just sitting here thinking that I'm not super, super confident that it's going to just give the results that people think it will.
Yeah, I mean, the last thing I'll get out of the way, but it's that the things that killed Team USA in this tournament were defensive rebounding could not clear the boards in the losses. Again, could not deal with the size of those teams that beat them down the stretch, and just a total breakdown at the point of attack. Where in
we
those
can't
losses,
get no stops, as Anthony Edwards said very eloquently
from our friend Kevin Pelton, ESPN Plus. In three losses, Team USA's defensive rating ballooned to 136.7. So they were giving up like almost 1.4 points per possession in the games that they lost. The switching wasn't working. They were not able to keep anybody off the defensive glass. They weren't able to finish possessions to kickstart their offense. So if you know, Draymond Green has been an important defensive rebounding player. Bam Adebayo is more of a box out guy than a go get you 15 rebounds guy, but is a big physical player in that. Embiid, obviously, as you mentioned, that's like the whole, that is a gigantic question mark. But we've seen now if Jaren Jackson Jr. is your lone five, that's a problem. In the last international tournament, before the Olympics, in the last World Cup, it was Miles Turner and Brook Lopez. Like, you need better answers to rebound the basketball, and you need better answers for when those teams start beasting down in the post. It can't just be switching a small guy. Whoever your smaller guards on the floor are, they're going to be in serious trouble. So the guys who are mentioned as, you know, your number one offensive stars that are all going to come together, they don't necessarily solve that problem. It becomes then a question of you have to outscore everybody, and that can be, you know, if the jumpers don't fall on any given night, that can be a tough hang.
Could be a tough hang for sure. You were a lovely hang today, as always. Aww, thanks,
buddy,
dealing with me while I'm dealing with all this congestion.
No, flu game Jake Fisher is no joke. He's out here.
I've had way too many flu games on this show, but that's another conversation for another podcast, because we are done here. That's going to do it for us on today's episode of No Cap Room. Thanks to John Gennaro for doing all the things he does to make the show look and sound great, even when I'm not wearing sleeves. Follow us on the various social media platforms that still exist. I'm at Jake O'Fisher. That is at Your Man Divine. Please subscribe to Ball Don't Lie on YouTube or whatever podcast platform you're currently listening to, and leave us a 5-star review. Before we go, I got to get one more shout out to the Powerpuff Girls, who were super, super helpful with laundry and the transportation shuttle from the FIBA World Cup. Shout out Leica, Avis, Jane, Serena, Lester overseeing the things, Raven. I told them I'd give a shout out on the pod. I couldn't get out of here without it. There you guys go. Thank you for teaching me the joys of Jollibee and everything else that makes the Filipino people wonderful. We thank you all for listening, and we'd appreciate it if you come back again next week for another episode of No Cap Room.
Shout out to Raven.